Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ned Ryan, the author of the new book, A Story of Boston and Bunker Hill, entitled The Adversaries. These are scenes that make a great deal of sense with the history we have of the events from late 74 into the clash of arms on Bunker Breeds Hill. These are two separate high rises over Charlestown and over Boston Harbor in June of 1775. But we'll get to the day itself. Ned, Gage is in charge, but Clinton, Burgoyne, and Howe are present. They have sufficient troops, very good troops, grenadiers, marines, light infantry.
Some of the best.
Right. And some of these troops have already clashed with the farmers in the march on Lexington and Concord. But they regard them as farmers, not as someone, as a group that can stand up to fix bayonets and lower and charge, which is what the British know how to do. Now, Gage, Clinton, Burgoyne, and Howe all see the same scene. Why do they decide to cross in boats and attack the hill? What is their concern that particular day?
Well, they're concerned that day on June 17th when they wake up and realize the Americans have built this earthen redoubt right above the town of Charleston across, you know, from Boston across the Charles River. They realize that it is now so close to Boston that if the American colonists are able to place cannons in this earthen redoubt, it puts the warships under fire, but also puts a lot of Boston within reach of any cannon. And so they realize if we do not run the Americans off of what is technically Breeds Hill that afternoon of June 17th, our days in Boston are numbered. We will find ourselves very soon on ships sailing for Nova Scotia because it will be untenable. Our position in Boston will be untenable. And so they have this council of war that morning of June 17th in which they come to the plan in which they will transport 2,000 troops across the Charles River to the Charlestown Peninsula, and those 2,000 troops will run the Americans off the hill, fix bayonets, march up the hill. And, you know, there was this arrogance with Howe and even others that they really thought the provincials, these farmers, at the sign of a bayonet charge will turn tail and run. But Lord Percy, who's one of the other senior British officers who actually helped rescue the British forces in Lexington and Concord that day, says they have men among them who know what they are doing. Don't be so sure that they're going to turn and run at a bayonet charge. And, of course, it plays out in a very brutal about hour and a half battle on those slopes of Breeds Hill, in which the British had a rude awakening that these were men the Americans were prepared to fight and could fight very well.
The layout of the rises. Breeds Hill was the original understanding of what we're going to reinforce, somewhat
back
from Charlestown. Breeds Hill is right above Charlestown, the high point.
Correct.
Bunker Hill is back about 200 or 300 yards?
I'd say about a quarter mile, a little over a quarter mile behind it. But you're right, Charlestown, it's right above the city. And the thing, John, I would actually look at it, I think better technical term for the whole day was the Battle of Charlestown Heights.
Okay.
Because people look at the earthen redoubt as the only fight, but there was the rail fence. There was a brutal fight on the Mystic River beach, which is on the other side of the peninsula. But it was really three major conflicts on that day at three different points in which any one of them could have turned one way or the other and actually shortened the battle, or, you know, if we'd had enough gunpowder, the Americans would have won. But it should be technically the Battle of Charlestown Heights.
All right. I go along with a theme that you introduced several times in your telling of the battle, which is extremely dramatic. And there are paintings that you can refer to. And I urge everybody to visit what Ned has profiled here, because once you're on the terrain, you understand the challenge to the British troops in Boston and to the British Navy in Boston Harbor. It's this theme. We've gone too far. We can't go back. This will be too much. We can't return from this. They have these doubts as they open fire on each other that there's no going back. And I felt the same thing, Ned. We've gone too far. This can only be settled with violence, with blood, with death. And yet, they were, it sickened them. It sickened Howe, it sickened Putnam, it sickened Warren, if I read you correctly.
Yes. No, I mean, this is one of the things, and I have, there was a prisoner exchange about 11 days before the actual battle, where Dr. Joseph Warren, Israel Putnam, and some of the British officers make a prisoner exchange of British regulars and officers and American troops that were captured at Lexington and Concord. And they make this exchange. And then actual history, they go and sit and have drinks and refreshments together and exchange all the stories because these people fought together. These were brothers in arms during the French and Indian War. And John Small and Israel Putnam were good friends, close friends. So it's one of those things where you have men who knew each other, who were friends, who had actually, you know, fought in all parts of the world, all of a sudden they find themselves 11 days later actually shooting at each other, killing each other. And it's this whole horrifying realization that they're friends and they were allies and now they are adversaries. And the only way they will get back to normal is obviously when one side decides that they're going to stop fighting and it would go on for another 6 years.
Why didn't they cut the neck, Charles' neck? Why didn't they cut it and just lay siege to the farmers?
Well, this was Henry Clinton's idea that they would have an amphibious assault on either side of the Charlestown neck, which is a relatively narrow strip of land. Land troops on either side, cut off the troops on Charleston Peninsula from the troops in Cambridge. And Howe and Gage and some of the other officers nixed the idea because they were afraid it would put a relatively small British force between what they thought would be several thousand that were already on the Charlestown Peninsula and several thousand more in Cambridge. And so they said, we're not going to do that. We will have a frontal assault, which in hindsight they realized it was a 50% casualty day for the British. Over 200 died outright, 800 wounded, but of those 800 that were wounded, another several hundred died over the next few weeks and months from their injuries received on June 17th.
In the first assault, Howe leads the right flank of the British line. He has a very good idea to attack the left flank of the farmers and get behind them. Who held the left flank? Who was responsible for turning Howe and the Grenadiers back?
John Stark of New Hampshire. He realizes the Mystic River beach is a weak point. He scrambles down to the beach. He pulls in 60 men, lines them up in three lines of 20, and all of a sudden when the Royal Welsh Fusiliers and the fourth, the King's Own, come around the corner, they realized we're not going to be able to roll up the American left flank. But John Stark's a pretty incredible figure. If you want to know where New Hampshire got the motto from, it's from a letter he wrote to his fellow veterans in 1809 in which he had a postscript in which he said, I leave you with this. Live free or die, there are worse things than death. And that's where New Hampshire's motto comes from John Stark, who protected the American left wing on the Mystic River beach. And really, quite frankly, it was one of the hot points in the battle that day, but it was because he had the foresight to understand we have to protect this beach.
I'm keen on Howe. It's Howe's point of view that's a fascination here. He saw that the first assault failed. He then saw the second assault failed. Why didn't he withdraw? What was his thinking for the third assault?
Well, first of all, he had ignored all of the advice and manuals from previous in which if you were to attack a fortified entrenched position, you were to attack in columns. And in his arrogance, he attacked in four rows of about 200, right? So it's one of those things he failed in his initial strategy. But they understood that if we don't drive the Americans off of this hill, the next couple of days we'll probably be on our ships sailing for Nova Scotia. It was conquer or die. And he realized, if we do not take this redoubt, again, our foothold in the American colonies will be in real question. And it became one of those desperate things where he put the men into three columns. They attacked the redoubt. They focused on that and were eventually able to get over the top because, quite frankly, the American colonists ran out of gunpowder.
Joseph Warren, he fought to the end. And
he did.
One reading is that he was executed. Is that, what is your opinion of his death?
You know, the one I went with is he's fighting rear guard action. He's covering the American retreat. He's in the middle of fighting off some of these grenadiers. And one of the British officers, and according to historical records, a British officer identified, saw Warren. They feared him. They loathed him. They hated him. And grabbed a musket from another soldier and at short range shot Warren in the head as he's fighting off grenadiers. But the British officers hated him. And one of the stories I try to really develop is between Dr. Joseph Warren and a young British officer, an Irishman by the name of Francis Lord Rawdon, to show that conflict, a microcosm of the conflict between the Americans and the British. But it's felt that he was seen by a British officer and shot at point blank as he's fighting.
Ned, where's Warren's grave? How can people find it? We have 30 seconds.
Warren's grave is Forest Hill Cemetery, about 5 miles south of Boston. And John, I think one of the real tragedies is that his body was moved by a descendant of his from the old granary burial grounds on the Freedom Trail to this current place, because I think Joseph Warren would be better known if he was still in the old granary burial grounds.
June 17, 1775, the Battle of Charleston Heights. The Adversaries is the book, Boston and Bunker Hill. Ned Ryan is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
There's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.